Knox, thank you very much. We'll get a cluster of questions. We've got about 20 minutes. So microphones moving. The gentleman there, you sir, there's a microphone. Please tell us who you are.
Thank you. My name is Elhaq Paul. I come from South Sudan and I live in London. First of all, I would like to thank you for having picked me up and also for the beautiful presentation that has been given by the three speakers. My view is that I've listened to all this, but it seems that there is one problem that people always forget in Africa, in a sense that all these big structures that are being planned somewhere are being done completely without consultations with the local people. And for example, how can we have security when the very agents and organs of security themselves generate insecurity, as Amandine has said, domestically? Because the character of the police forces in all the African countries really desires a lot. The way they behave are completely out of the law. They behave as powers unto themselves, completely devoid, and they generate insecurity. Similarly with the military people. So if the training of the police and the military forces or the security forces is not ethically done to the point whereby they become agents of security rather than agents of generating insecurity, I don't know how these big structures are going to work. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take three questions. Lady just here.
Hello, I have a question to you.
Can you tell us who you are?
My name is Helen Wieland. I work at the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. And I have a question to you. You were talking about an eventual military intervention in Mali. And you were saying that intervention is possible or is necessary. But at the same time, you talked about the lack of capacity and lack of capabilities of, for example, ECOWAS forces. And I would just like to know if you think that this could be one of the issues with an intervention, or how do you see this? Thank you.
Thank you. And lady just here. Yeah, you. There's a microphone just there by you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Maddalena Procopio. I come from the LLC. I'm a PhD student, and I'm working on China-Africa relations. And my question may be shifting a little bit away from what you said, but I think it may still be quite relevant to the bigger picture. When it comes to external forces, no one has mentioned China. And China is playing an increasingly significant role, actually, in Africa, on the social, political, as well as like economic aspects of the continent. And it's bringing in a quite different paradigm compared to Western paradigms made of mainly non-interference in internal affairs, etc. So I just wanted to know, what do you think, if you think that China may be having an influence on African leaders and the management of security issues in the future?
Okay, thank you. Amadine, do you want to answer the question about Mali first of all?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I said we have to intervene. The question, as you mentioned, is who? Of course, the question about the lack of capacity is a real problem. I read yesterday an article about Nigerian capacity, and it's unfortunately, we know now that Nigeria would not have the capacity to intervene like they did in Liberia in the 90s. So that's why for most of the actors, we're talking about reinforcement capacity. For the international community, the first step is to reinforce the national capacity, I mean the Mali army, but it could take a long time. So actually, I don't know if we have to think about all of these details about who has the capacity to intervene only in West Africa. We should try to mobilize to find other countries in the continent and to find a way to intervene. Because if we don't intervene, there will not be a solution for the political issue. We don't have the condition now to create a dialogue between the Malian people, to create condition to build a new army, a new social contract between the political leaders and the population, as it was mentioned by the other question. And so, yes, we have to intervene. And that's why it takes so many times now, because everybody knows that we have to intervene, but nobody knows who have to the capacity. Because actually, I think the problem is we have, the question is, who has the legitimacy, as I told you? Obviously, the African states. The legitimacy to intervene, it's African people. We are in the context of African ownership. But the question is, who has the capacity? Actually, it's not the African states. And just to give you the example, look at the Côte d'Ivoire, because actually France had not the legitimacy to intervene in Côte d'Ivoire because of the past, because of a lot of relationship. But who had the capacity? France. So we are exactly in the same situation. So maybe we will see some kind of solution of not very clear at the beginning, but I don't know who. At the end, we will have the solution.
David, you were going to answer the questions about local level consultation and also touch on China-Africa
yes.
relations.
Just so that I agree with Amandine about Mali, I think we're in danger of doing something extremely stupid in Mali and defining this as a military problem and a problem of defeating a particular movement. On the local level consultation, absolutely, I've had the honour to be involved in South Sudan from time to time. I think there's a very important point which has been raised here. What you need are capable, effective, properly paid, properly trained, properly equipped forces. Such forces behave well. One of the things that is absolutely clear to me from many years of doing this is you cannot lecture people into being good. You cannot say, I know you're not being paid as policemen, but you must be honest. None of us... How many of us, come on, let's be honest, how many of us would behave honestly in such a situation? So it seems to me that one of the reasons why the whole APSA structure is very fragile at the bottom is it requires the cooperation of organisations which are not effective at the national level and which are not effective exactly the kind of reasons that you say. And we need to work to get those organisations effective first. And I just agree with Knox also that I think the police dimension has been massively underestimated by donors and also as an important element in reconstructing societies. Far too little attention, frankly, has gone into making sure that the police, the military, the intelligence services and so forth just have the basics properly trained, properly equipped, properly led, properly motivated. Once you have forces like that, they behave well. Forces that don't have those things don't behave well. On China, I was very interested in the comment made by Jinping just before he was turfed out as Secretary General of the African Union after the last EU-Africa summit in Tripoli, saying that, yes, of course, Europe was an important partner, but they were also looking in other directions. I think this is extremely significant. I think the key to this is that African nations now, not just through China, but through India, Brazil, and various other partners from overseas, are developing new flexibilities and new options, and also new ways of looking at security. And I think we haven't begun to understand the implications of this yet.
Thank you. Knox, did you have a very quick...
Yeah, just agree entirely on the question of the police. I think one of the key things is... Both police and army, the people who are in the police and army, we need to change the focus from those who are in the militaries from being on power to responsibility and to invest in those. I think there needs to be that kind of paradigm shift. And if that can start to happen, then we can make progress.
Very quick. Okay. Amadine also has a...
Yes, just a very quick comment, a little bit provocative concerning your question, but I think we should... wonder what is at stake actually for the political leader in Africa. Is it to protect their own regime or is it to increase the development and the standard of living of their own population. And that's why I think there is a real disconnection between what is at stake at the regional level to protect some political regime and create some rent-seeking situation for the political leader, and what you underline, I mean, what is at stake at the local level. I mean, the necessity to survive every day for the population.
Okay. In terms of African peace and security investment by China, the lady from CIPRI can probably give you a report that CIPRI did that was very good a couple of years ago, since you're almost sitting next to her. That's coincidental. I can only see a really tall arm with a pen. Ah, oh, there you are, sir. Please, your question.
I'm Samuel Davis, member of Chatham House. Now, I'm looking at security and stability in Africa. There is a dimension that has not been mentioned, and that is the fifth dimension of security in this 21st century, and in particular, cyberspace. I see cyberspace, cybersecurity, as an opportunity for peace and stability in Africa, but that has not been mentioned by any of the panelists. And also,
one question. Can we just keep it at that, because we've got very limited time? Thank you, sir. We'll move to this gentleman here.
I'm Ibrahim Dagan Ali. I come from Somalia, and I've been in UK quite a short time. I really have some misgiving on security issues, and I feel that coming from Somalia, there has been, AMISOM has been there for almost quite 5 years, and it has been doing great job to a certain extent. But the issue of conflict and instability and security in Africa isn't an issue of misgovernance. And that requires not only addressing in terms of military way, but also in looking in the political security, livelihood security, food security, and it encompasses all issues. And the issue of police, sending police from OAU to Mogadishu, I find it very, it's like sending somebody from Georgia to Kosovo, to bullies. I don't know how to put it in that dimension, but how it could be African police force will solve the problem of Mogadishu, because that's civilian in nature. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've neglected this side, so if we move to the front, the lady with the red coat. I'm kind of colorblind, but you'll both get a chance. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Lalaina. I'm a student at King's College, World Studies Department. I'm from Madagascar. So my point of view is about Madagascar. So I think that I do agree with Amandine when you say there is a state is part of a solution, but also part of a problem. But I think also that the international community is also part of a problem regarding the situation in Madagascar, because I think that the challenge is not only about the mediation not to be violent, but to make it shorter, 5 years of crisis, political crisis, too much in Madagascar. And I think that it's not only because of the state or because of the local population, because the local population has never been consulted. I think that the international community has consulted the wrong person in Madagascar, only the politicians and the leaders. So what do you think, regarding, because you've mentioned a lot of Mali and Cote d'Ivoire, but not Madagascar, what is your point about Madagascar? Thank you.
Thank you. And just hand the... Yeah, exactly. Very quick now.
Okay, I'm Dalaya. I'm from Ethiopia. I'm also from King's College, Africa Leadership Center. Actually, mine is a comment and also a brief question. I agree with Mr. David that he says, we need African solutions and we need African people to own their solutions. And today I feel like I'm a bit disappointed, because I see one of the speakers is from Zimbabwe and two of them are not from Africa. And, if we're going to own our solutions, and we need to have Africans to lead the debate of this issue. I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about the AU and African people, and who are we talking it to and who's talking about it? So I just want to make that comment.
Okay. I will defend us that we did try and get a number of African speakers here, but the British visa regime defeated our opportunities. The gentleman behind.
Good afternoon. My name's Chidi Won. I'm a member of Chatham House. I was going to ask a question about police forces, but I'll take this opportunity to first defend Nigeria's military honour in terms of stating that Nigeria, the article yesterday stating Nigeria doesn't have the capacity to mount operations in Mali is kind of ridiculous. Our combat power is sufficient that we can, you know, generate a battalion or a brigade to go out there. And if you follow Nigerian military blogs or news reports, you know that, you know, forces are deploying to the northwest. We've got our air assets deploying out there. So we should take that with a little bit of a pinch of salt. I mean, just quickly into my question about police forces. As you stated, we seem to be neglecting a lot of African police, or most of the problems in Africa are account of insurgencies, wars amongst the people. And wouldn't it maybe be, rather than setting up an ASF, an infantry force, a mechanized or, you know, a military-based force, a paramilitary police force with, you know, civilian stabilization advisors may be a better option, because it will be easier for foreign donors to fund it and to justify to their populations. Be easier for, you know, fragile states to accept, you know, no state wants to have another army in their territory. So it's easier for another state to justify, you know, taking in, you know, police forces rather than a military force. So if that's something, maybe that could be considered. Thank you.
Okay. If the panel here answers really quickly, we'll be able to get another one round. Knox, do you want to respond to?
Okay. I think in a sense I'll respond to both your point and the gentleman from Somalia, because you're both talking about police. I think that's an excellent idea. I think the real question at the heart of all this is what is the kind of police architecture for Africa, both in terms of the APSA, in terms of the regional, and also in terms of the national? I'm not saying the police can solve every problem. From the start of my presentation, I talked about comprehensive security, which is about comprehensive security. But in that comprehensive security, I think the police will play an important role. But I think that whole question is something that it has reached a point now where it needs to be discussed and resolved. And it may well be that having police as a paramilitary may be one option forward. But we can't say that the police are the solution to the questions about African security. It has to be in the context of the wider comprehensive security.
Amadi.
Okay, we can discuss.
Madagascar.
Yes, yeah. We can discuss after if you want, yeah, about Madagascar. But to have a quick answer, I will say that yes, international community is part of the problem, because most of the states are national interests to defend, and the local actors use this national interest to instrumentalize in the way the conflicts. This is the problem, actually, because as I told you, states are under construction and they use every actors, every intervention to create some legitimacy, including from outside. And this is the problem, I think, for the international community, because they want to intervene. Yes, you can intervene in a conflict, but you have to be clear about what consequences you will have in the peace process at the short term and at the long term. But we can discuss after.
David.
Okay, very briefly, first of all, let's remember what the African security problem is, generically, which explains a number of the comments about regime preservation, this kind of thing. It is that on independence, African states inherited territories which they did not have the resources to control, and they've never been able to generate the resources to control those territories. As long as you get that, you get a situation analogous to early modern Europe, where regime preservation was effectively the purpose of the security forces. Should Africans be sitting here where I am? Yes. I spent 20 years going to Africa trying to put myself out of a job. I'm still trying. But the problem is that we find it very, very hard to have African interlocutors. I'll be quite blunt with you about this. African interlocutors who think and speak like Africans instead of thinking and speaking like Westerners. And I'm sorry, this is a criticism which I have to make. I want Africans to come and tell me I'm wrong. I want Africans to produce African solutions. African solutions tend to be Western solutions with a coat of paint, and that is not the right answer. What are African solutions? Well, I'll give you two. One is, why don't you think of returning to the traditional African model of the citizen soldier, for example, of getting rid of the Western professional model in Africa, which has not worked, going over to a part-time militia system. Militias are everywhere in Africa. Why not use them? And secondly, why not make use of that for control and for control of territory? Not for defence of territory. You don't need to defend territory in Africa. Nobody can attack you. Nobody's got the force space ratios. Okay, but control of territory. And at that point, you begin to address the African security problem.
David, thank you very much. I'm afraid we've run out of time. I want to end now to give you the opportunity, those who haven't been able to ask your questions, to at least come up and talk to the panelists. I'd like to thank David, Amadine, and Knox for their presentations, and especially David and Amadine from coming from France over here to And there is another of this series in December, and we're also doing a conference in December on Gulf of Guinea security. There will be participation from the Gulf of Guinea Commission, ECOWAS, ECAS, and many others. 6th of December, if you're interested in your diaries. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.